Okay, this is an interview with James Wickham with Heather Miller. It's April 28th, 2012, and we are at a coffee shop in Auburn, California. Okay, can you just tell me a little bit about where you grew up and went to school and that sort of thing?
I was born and raised in Santa Monica, and I did a lot of hiking around the Santa Monica Mountains and attended school whenever I felt like it. I believe I set a record that still stands for truancy. But then at 17, we had a war on, and I believe I had to go out and single-handedly win it. So I enlisted in the Marine Corps. I'm actually in the Navy Medics. Sent to the Marine Corps, but they took my war away from me when I was still in training, so I never got to win the Congressional Medal of Honor, which I undoubtedly would have. And in all truth, I have to admit that the atom bomb undoubtedly saved my tail, because we were going into a homeland, Japan, and it would have been a mess. Not only would we have lost a lot of people, but there would awful lot of civilian Japanese killed. You might argue about the second atom bomb, but I still feel the first atom bomb was an absolute necessity and a horrible thing, but a humane way. Or it was humane in a horrible way, let's put it that way. So then I discharged. Returned to Santa Monica City College for a while to make up for some of my misdeeds in high school. And at that time I was offered an opportunity to play football at a college, but it wasn't a good college. And I was majoring in philosophy then, and I wanted to go to either UCLA or Berkeley. And one of my English teachers at Santa Monica City College seemed to think that I had some talent. I think he thought I was going to major in English, but he got me into Berkeley, and I attended there until I met my wife Mavis.
Run to the bank really quick. I'll be right back.
Graduated and left the university, and for a while I was writing the Great American Novel, which all writers have to get out of their system. And it was just as bad as most great American novels are. Full of teenage angst that you should have gotten over before that. And the last thing that the American literature is another novel about the coming of age of a sensitive teenager. Dreadful. But fortunately, but before that happened, Mavis became pregnant, and I had to look for a legitimate job. And one day she was in the Fish and Game Office getting our licenses, and she said, "Well, you know, there's opening for game wardens." And I said, "That'd be fun to do for 6 months until I find what I really want to do." So I took the test and got a Don't bother us about showing up kind of oral, but I'm a good test taker, and they had a written test, and I nailed the written, and just barely got on. And we had a school for 40 of us, and they tried to do a ranking of their potential, and I was 39th out of 40, and the 40th guy was a guy named Ray Aspel, and turned out to be a hell of a good warden, but he was just very young, and I was suspect because he thought of me as bookish and probably not a very good, probably not going to be a very good fish cop. That was the word when I went up to Covelo. There was 120 positions that you could apply for. The only one which no one ordered was to go to Covelo, so I got Covelo. And tell you the truth, I love this. The only problem with the Kovalo was that spend all your time fighting Indians and loggers, and many of the citizens up there considered it was false arrest if you didn't whip them first. So it was an entertaining place to learn to be a game warden, but a lot of my cohorts were good old-time officers. Of the ones that looked down on me if you took your days off. And I can remember on one occasion when I came in and my eldest daughter didn't recognize me. I'd been working such long hours. You know, that's too much. And so from then on, I always took my days off. I might not work a 14-hour day. And we had in those days what was called 4B classification. And this was where you could work as well as you just donate the hours. Of course, the unions loved that. Well, they finally got rid of it. And I Prittner had a riot on my hands. At that time, I was a captain. And I told the guys, you're going to have to work 8-hour days. That's an order. And they said, okay, boss. And they'd go out at 8 in the morning and come back at 8 at night, take half an hour for lunch, and only work 8 hours. I'm not sure how they did it. I wasn't about to question it either. I think one of the many times I stepped on some toes was when I said I was not about to question it. I could see how the media would love it if I tried to discipline somebody for donating their time. But those days, we still have a resident officer system. And at some point, good officers, or potentially good officers, get to have a very personal, protective feeling about it. And they're not, guys that are out there poaching deer, they're not just shooting a deer, they're shooting my deer. And what God, I'm going to hang them to the nearest tree. And those are the guys that will stay out for a week to catch somebody. I remember having to work with the guys from Parks. Nice guys. And they'd worked fine for 8 hours, but they had 8 hours, they're going home. And the board says, you're going where? And, you know, it just, it didn't operate on the same level. The wardens were, and I hope still are, very, do a lot by dedication. And they would, might not call it that, but that's what it amounts to. And then I was in Sacramento, I had to keep them, as assistant chief, I had to constantly remind people, the tail does not wag the dog. What we do here is important only as it affects how the officers perform in the field, but the tail does not wag the dog. So, anyway, I stayed in Kovalo for 3 years until it was dinner. Well, my middle daughter had a health problem. She had juvenile asthma, and we almost lost her one time. And just fortunately, a doctor was there in town to save her, and they didn't have a doctor there all the time. So that was one reason. The second was that my eldest daughter was beginning to was entering kindergarten, and she'd be in school with a lot of people whose kids whose fathers I had arrested. So it was a good time to leave. So. Anyway, I got a transfer to the Bay Area, and down there, I did a lot of the regular game warden things, but essentially I was really doing fugitives. Get a guy goes up to the country, and he gets a ticket for fishing without a license, and goes back to Oakland. Well, nobody's going to bother me. I'd come and find him and pick him up. And then we did some... I didn't patrol much in Oakland. Oakland had a weird system. Just out of convenience for the court clerk's office, they wouldn't take you couldn't write the guy a citation. You had to take him in and book him on fishing without a license, and take his three kids that he's taken down for a day and take them over to juvenile. So naturally, we worked Oakland very little, and then my partner Chet Gall. Went to the judges and said, you know, this is ridiculous, and judges agreed it's ridiculous, and then they started writing citations just like every other jurisdiction. So it was only for the convenience of the courts clerk they're doing that, and it, That still bothers me that I ever did arrest anybody on that. I did never. First or second time it happened, that was it. I did. There's plenty of places to patrol without patrolling also. But then stayed in Oakland, or stayed in the Bay Area for 10 years, and then I promoted to captain. And I was in the, I moved to Lodi, and I had the seven counties around there, up as high as Alpine County, and then San Joaquin and part of Sacramento, and it was a big area, and I had 13 officers at that time. They are so shorthanded now, I can't believe how they could even begin to patrol, or even just respond to calls.
Mm-hmm.
I pity the people who are trying to work under draconian systems of, not attrition, it's slaughter, getting rid of their officers. But we lived there for a while, and then took another list, and I took another test, got on the list, was promoted to what was then called inspector, now deputy chief, but it was inspector because we were still on the system. Like, inspector is pretty much a big deal in the East Coast. I mean, it's over captain. But inspector around here, around the Bay Area, that's appointment just between patrolman and sergeant. It's under sergeant. And we had a big takedown of the thing, and I took one of my lieutenants with me, and I'd say something, and then all the other officers looked at the lieutenant to see if that was right. But that was pretty much it. You want coffee or anything?
No.
So let's see what happened then. Oh, I got a transfer over to Napa County, or more live in Napa. I had the 13 coastal counties between Region 1 and Region 5. 5 starts around Ventura, just below there, and 1 starts up around Humboldt County. And that was, I had that for, but I was going to retire. And then the chief, who did one of my captains, asked me to stay on and put together an undercover unit, because we always knew that we were only, thrown around on a pickup, you only catch the easy ones, the ones that are real hardcore, and you need to approach it just like you do narcotics. So I agreed, and we put together an undercover unit, and that's where I got these, because I'm not... I look too much like a cop to really do undercover work, but I can do things like being a bag man, the guy that comes in with the money. Well, that I can do and help with. But I stayed with that until I retired, and I've kept in touch with some of the people in fishing game, but I attend the retirees luncheon, but outside of that, I've never been one of the sad souls that keep hanging around the fishing game office after they're retired. And incidentally, those guys were always the ones you couldn't drag kicking or screaming to a fishing game camp out or anything, and now you can't keep them away. You get very attached to the job. I know that I had trouble letting go. I used to watch cops program the rig. Every time they'd kick in the door and say, I want to be there. Well, my days of kicking in doors is long gone, but it was hard for me to recognize that. So, have I given you a general idea of my career?
Well, yeah, I have some little more specific questions. So when you first started out in Fish and Game in Covelo, when you were out in the field, what kind of equipment did you have with you?
That was the day was when you had to buy your own gun and handcuffs. And we didn't have, there were around a few radios around, but there was no repeater, so they didn't reach out or anything. So really, in effect, we had no radio, except we would carry a sheriff's office radio and they would dispatch us. Because when a place like Covelo, there was the resident deputy and the resident game warden, and that was it. And when he had a fight in the bar, and I'd get a call from the bartender, Fred needs you, and I'd run down there, we'd bone heads and stuff, and get the thing settled. But on the opening days of deer season, I had a lot of people. Fred just dropped me in deputy, and he'd go patrol like a game warden. I mean, this is the kind of cooperation that you couldn't afford after these interesting fights between agents. You just seem to me to be childish. I mean, they've never experienced when the only help that you got is, other than the one resident deputy, is 50 miles of dirt road away. You can't afford to indulge in those kinds of little unforeseen imbroglios. But they did give us binoculars, our best tool. And I had to buy all my own leather, gun, handcuffs, and a sap. And they gave us flashlights too. Big old five cells. If you hit somebody on the head with it, you just spread batteries all over. Maybe they might step on a battery and hurt themselves. You couldn't hurt them much with that. Later on, most of us bought the mag lights, you know, that are in a hard case and can be used to tap somebody on the shoulder if necessary. That was the... I remember, too, that trying to stay warm up in Covelo, I was sort of thin-blooded surfer type from Southern California. And my mother-in-law sewed a liner into the only jacket that I could afford. Boy, I blessed her for that. I still froze, but not nearly as much. There's two kinds of ways you can stake out. One is in a vehicle, in which you can stay pretty warm even if you can't run it. To use a heater, and just being out of the wind and stuff can get you pretty comfortable. And then the other way, you have to get out in the weather and sit in it. Those get so cold. And a friend of mine once said, a cold night never ends. You ever do any backpacking or anything?
A little bit.
Well, so you know what I mean about a cold night.
Mm-hmm.
It just goes on and on and on. I can remember I had to do horseback patrol when I was in Covelo. And the only bag that I could afford was a cheap Kapok thing I'd had when I went to church camp in junior high school. So I used to lay down a layer, I'd get built up a fire, and then I'd lay down a layer of horse blankets, and then I'd put the bag on there, and then fully clothed I'd get in, and I'd toss a couple more horse blankets, or mule blankets, on top of it, and then lie there in sheer fetal position until morning, praying for it to be morning. Awful, I'd just love to do it again.
How often did you go on horse patrols back there?
Probably two or three times a year. I back up onto the Trinity National Forest, and the next warden up felt that riding a horse or an African lion was about the same amount of risk. So he didn't do much horse control, so I had to do a little bit more. I'm not sure that my district would have, and then I had a captain who thought he was a cowboy. And so he liked to go along and bring his vocalizing and his brandy with him. And, as much as I disliked his vocalizing, I did like his brandy, so. And back rope did teach me how to throw a diamond hitch. I'm not sure I could still do it. I'll bet you anything, there are not many game wardens today that can throw a diamond hitch.
So when you went on patrols like that, were you just hoping you'd spot somebody?
Well, we knew that there was things that were happening. We'd get information. Some of the Forest Service guys couldn't care less, but some would tell you, too. There was a guy who used to have a stockyard up around New Orleans, and he used to bring a bunch of mules over, and he'd stock up blasting the holes off the summer steelhead runner, which was in trouble anyway. But the summer steelhead come up in the winter, and then they winter over in the summer, and then in fall they spawn and drop back. They summer over if somebody doesn't come in with a quarter stick of dynamite and blow the hole. And he put them over there and dry, take out, I hate to think how many salmon he must have taken, some of the salmon he must have gotten. And I never caught him. I got a lot of saddle for it from, but I never got lucky. I think he finally died. I don't know if I could get rid of that bastard. Yeah, I can remember all the guys that beat me, the ones that I can remember the ones that didn't beat me, too. But as you see, a personal thing, my salmon. What the hell is that guy doing stealing my salmon? Yeah. Have you interviewed many other wardens?
I haven't.
Uh-huh.
Other people in the class.
I think you will find that my feeling about them being personal properties is not unique. I don't know whether they recognize it or they articulate it, but it's not a unique attitude. I'm happy to hear that, to say that. The other day, I called fishing game office right around 8:15 for the open. I got a recording that said, we're too busy to answer the call back. Call back later, and I thought, shades of the Beverly Hills Police Department's supposed non-pub number. And I thought, somebody just walk into that office. I know what's there. I've been in fishing game office at 8:15. There's a couple people pouring themselves a second cup of coffee. There's a lot of BSing going on. They're talking about the ball game that night. And they're not too busy to answer the damn phone. And I've always been proud of fishing game. It distresses me to see people goofing off like that. Probably shouldn't have said all that, but it's true. The lawyer, casts an aspersion on all the good people in fisheries and game management, certainly casts an aspersion on the wardens, who I will not pretend do not have guys that goofed off, but most of them found employment elsewhere. One guy was working as a carpenter, another was working as a car salesman, doing fishing game patrolling on the side and getting a full salary. A little of that goes a very long way.
So, typical day, how would you describe it?
Well, I'm not sure there is such a thing as a typical day.
Yeah.
But a typical day in the Bay Area would be I probably wake up and play with my daughters and get them off to school. And because I'd probably been out very late the night before certain warrants. Then I would get out there with my warrants and stack all the warrants and start with the phone. Because I got to know that it's a source of information phone, and I could find out an awful lot. Maybe even where a guy worked, you know, where he would be that day. And I'd use the phone as much as I could. And then when that was done, I would take the warrants and put them in the order I was going to try to serve them. That'd be geographical order. And I would go out and start picking up people, put them in handcuffs and take them down, put them in jail. And then I would do that until later in the day. I might come home for dinner, I might not. And then I'd go out, go to maybe serve some more warrants, and then I'd maybe go out and spotlight my warrants. And go to some places over in the Berkeley Hills where they were still there and they were still spotlighted. Work that till 2 in the morning, and then come back.
That's what we're after.
In that area just now, for some other thing, if we have a season opener or something, get you down the day before and then out early on the field. Check in backgrounds and licenses. Like I said, hard to give you a typical day because that was one of the beauties of the job, and whether there wasn't such thing as a typical day.
Mm-hmm.
And, I was never bored. For duck season, the typical day would be absolutely different. Because we probably have a club we wanted to set up on.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're going to set up on a duck club, you have to get in early enough to scare the ducks off and then they have time to work back in and get into your position, and to do that first a day earlier or several days earlier, you'd go in and see if they had birds and if they were using bait to get the birds and where their shooting boxes were, because you didn't want to be right in the shoot box. You had to be close enough that you could intercept them before they could get back to the clubhouse. But not so you'd be found. And I tell about it in one of the stories when these guys are coming to their blind, and one of them needs to urinate, and he comes right over to this corner where I'm standing hidden, and pees on my boots. I didn't know it. I damn well know if it's one thing I could do. I thought I'd play it with an open weapon. We've checked out. We know where they're going to, how they get in, how they get out. Usually a caretaker brings them down and then keeps watch. So make them no nasty game wardens around. But then we would set up there and start counting drops on them. And there's where you run into some sort of an interesting moral question. If the shooting is good, and they're over the limit, and now every bird is maybe going to cost you another $100, do you wait and let them get more birds, or do you cut them off? My feeling was once you got enough pinch, you cut them off because and save the birds. But there has always been a difference of opinion, wardens, about what you do under those circumstances.
Mm-hmm. There you go.
We would.
Here's where you're going.
Catch them.
It's called Marshall's tickets.
See the birds. Do all those
things. Where we're at here. This gets you through town.
And one time when
you just follow the
busted an ex-fish and game commissioner.
17.9 miles.
Had convinced these billionaires that he was a dude that nobody
get lost with what
the rest of them all proved him wrong. He was not happy. I had to physically restrain him. I actually sort of regretted I didn't just dump him and throw him to jail. But I guess because he was, well, not because he was the fat old man. I mean, he shoved him against me. I thought, oh, see, I throw this guy with a great circle throw and land on top of him. But,
nah.
And then we busted him again. But he had a gold license they gave him when he left the Fish and Game Commission. And three busts within a year, and any license goes. I wanted to get that gold license. We got him twice, but I couldn't get him, never put together the third one. So he still had his, but I noticed that the place where I used to hunt, his name was off the cabin, and I think that they tossed him out. I mean, he was a rich man, but by their standards, he was, one of the guys that hunted there, the guy from Baron Hilton Hotels, and Pauly Oil. I mean, these were people. They'd fly in and hunt, and then they'd jump in their jets and fly down to L.A. to watch a football game. I mean, they had a standard of living that most of us could only imagine. Remember being out there, and they're having stroganoff for lunch. They invited us for lunch. I think we just busted a trespasser, so they were happy with us. And the guy's cooking the lunch for them is a head chef for the Hilton Hotels. And he's drinking the rest of the cooking wine with his lunch. Chateau Lafite, $125 a bottle, cooking wine. I mean, and people like that, some of them can be very nice, but they can't imagine that any $400 a month game warden could have the temerity to say that they should obey the law just like any brush oakie. And I've arrested some of these millionaires, and I've caught less hell from arresting Hell's Angels, let's put it that way. I think maybe that explains how they reacted to the idea that they were going to be brought before the arm of the law.
Can you talk a little bit more about your undercover work?
Yeah, we had what we had going was a let me get the background. Orientals like their fish cooked very lightly or raw, and the best fish for that is a black bass. The second is a striped bass, and there's a big hook and line striped bass fishery in the bay there. And these, we had all these guys that I don't know in employment who were driving brand new SUVs and fishing out of big, nice big Boston Whalers. Some of them buying apartment houses, and they never would come in with. They were smart that they never come in with over limit. They'd catch three fish, take them in, catch three more, come in, have three more, and they were doing quite well. So we set up a company, we called it the New China Fish Company. And as usual, the state didn't have any money, but we got the feds to help us. And they had some money, and a sportsman's club gave us $2,000 for buy money. I've always described stress as when all your buy money is involved in a load of salmon packed in ice. And you don't have any place to sell them to the salmon, and the ice is beginning to melt. But anyway, we busted dozens of them, and it got a lot of publicity, and everybody was very happy except the fishermen. And they said, maybe we ought to be able to do this on a permanent basis. And so they set up a school of space, and it's still going, Special Operations Unit. I think they just made it a big ad bust a while back. And we got together, well, I received the wardens, and I got some very good ones, which is fortunate, because it doesn't always happen that way. I remember when I had to act like the department's legal team, and which I'm no lawyer, but I can read and I ought to shepherdize a case. And we were used to have a lawyer given to us by the Attorney General's office. Well, you can imagine they didn't give us the young hotshot that could take on the dream team. We got some old guy who, with a degree from the Tijuana University of Medicine and Diesel Repair and Law and Diesel Repair. So I learned on that I had to, early on, that I had to take out all the defense lawyers, but some of the attorney general people too. But that's an aside. So anyway, I didn't always get the officers, the best officers available, but I got some young officers, and we put together some other busts of that kind. And like I say, I could help the bag man, but I walk down the street and people start whipping out their licenses. I just look like a cop. I remember when I was doing Fugitive and I was hiding behind, what I used, one of my favorite was a newspaper and the rear view mirror, so I had a mirror to look for. And I see this guy come out of the rear view mirror and I put it down and I start out of the car and he sees me and we're off on a West Oakland steeplechase. And finally I catch him. Say, hey, and I, hey man, how come you ran? Because I got one of the old clothes and everything. He says, man, no matter how you address, you is the police. So I guess I was. So the idea of trying to send me in and as a UC, an undercover. But I had some people that did do undercover that were quite good at it. And they had, actually the best one I had was a girl who was fairly obvious her sexual orientation was not toward men. But that made her less suspect, and she was tough. She was street tough, and she did a hell of a good job. But I've always felt sorry because I know she would hack it as a resident officer, right? Yeah, there'd be too much prejudice. But she isn't working for the department now. Hey. She did a good job.
What bust were you most proud of accomplishing?
Well, I thought the New China bust was very good because we hit so many people and got so much publicity out of it. Let's see, what ones am I personally proud of? They sort of run together. We busted up a commercial deer poaching thing, and that was done in West Oakland too. You don't usually, the trouble I've had with commercial deer poaching was very seldom in African Americans. It was almost always Anglos, but this one happened to be African Americans. That was a door kicker. I knew that they had deer there. I certainly had a search warrant. They were about to open the door, so I opened it. I don't know whether you could do that now or not. I suppose you'd probably have to get hung out to dry. I'll tell you, Pamela, it was fun. It was fun. I'd love to do it all over again with the same cast. Except this time I know how I'd do a couple of things different, catch a couple of guys that got away. Like a bastard who was hitting the summer steelhead, I'd get him this time. If I had to hide in the bushes for 2 weeks, I'd catch that guy.
How often did you coordinate with local law enforcement?
Well, as I told you, in the Army, like my brother, it depends a lot. The relationship with the Highway Patrol isn't always real good. We got a rumble with one Highway Patrolman was a poacher and said that he'd going to shoot the first game warden to try to stop him, you know, right to his badge, and it was probably bull. But and this, we got this from other officers that didn't like it and didn't like him. I must admit, though, that I've been heard a game warden saying, "I don't know why these damn highway patrolmen can't obey the law. What's the matter with them? We're going down the highway at 85 miles an hour." I'm sure that there's plenty of reason to be unhappy with our activities, too. But one thing I did notice about the Highway Patrol was you stop a bunch of them hunting, and they're not doing anything wrong. They're just out hunting. It's hunting season. Their guns are unloaded and everything. The first thing you see is their badge. I mean, they all whip out their badge. And that's, I guess that happens to them so much that maybe they think that's the way to handle it, but they didn't need any professional courtesy, so why throw me your damn badge? Let's see, sometimes they tend to think of the Thule Creepers, as they call us, or the fishing game people as, not real cops, and that hurts a little bit. When I was back at the FBI National Academy, I was proud to be the strongest guy in the class, and I felt I upheld the so-called honor of the fishing game, all right. But then generally, I mean, it's a case of, you know, I don't like this guy, I don't want to have coffee with him or anything, but I'll die for him. But that's the brother officer, and that's the way it is. You take the name, you play the game.
When did you go to the FBI Academy?
1975. I was pretty near the oldest guy in there.
Did Fish and Game send you there, or did you go
well,
there?
Well, the FBI pays for it. They sent me in, they paid my salary.
Oh.
But the FBI, they choose the people they want. You can be nominated. They did not officially nominate me.
Mm-hmm.
But the FBI, they pay your airfare back there, and food and lodging and good training. They're good people, good officers. I'm sorry to see them get mixed up in some stuff. It was just post Hoover, and they were still trying to adjust to the lack of the autocratic rule that they had under him. And he was a most interesting man. Most interesting man. I mean, he did build them up, and I guess his black book on politicians was extensive, and that didn't hurt. But I would stick up for him too. You know, when they had the Japanese Exclusion Act moving them independent into camps. The one senior official said, "This is bullshit." It's unnecessary, it's unfair, and it's wrong. Because who? Most people don't know. And the guy who was pushing it was Earl Warren. They're very liberal. So I've never had a great deal of respect for Warren. Not over that, but a lot of different things. I certainly have no quarrel with the decision versus the Board of Education anyway that it threw out separate and equal, which was clearly in conflict with the 14th Amendment. I know that question. But things that he did when he was Attorney General in Alameda make even a tough cop like me shake my head and wonder when they would hire a room floor of a hotel, get a subject in there and work on him in teams and hide him so that his attorney couldn't get a writ. I mean, most of the stuff that limits fishing, that limits the game, warden, limits law enforcement, it sounds like it was designed to keep people from being Earl Warren. I mean, Warren knew what he was. And Miranda and things like that are just the kind of responses you need if you've got somebody like Earl Warren. As you see, I'm not a big fan of him.
Well, what kind of training did you get at the FBI Academy?
3 months of... I guess it was 40-hour week, and more if you want to take a couple of evening classes, which I did. I spent my time mostly setting up, or learning how to set up a field training officer program, which I thought and still think is a very good and valid program. It gives you extra screening, and it's based on the idea that nobody but a game warden can teach you to be a game warden. And it, you know, we still have the FTO program, and I'm sure it's helped. I fortunately found a good man here, and an ex-highway patrolman, to onshore out. He's just done one hell of a good job with it. And the FBI training program had a lot of law, which was good. And I needed it because I couldn't write a brief. I could read a brief, but I couldn't really write one. And it, of course, had mechanics of arrest. Well, I taught mechanics of arrest, so I didn't feel that was any particularly strong thing for me. And got a certain amount of shooting and shot Hogan's Alley, as it's called, which is one where they have targets pop up and you shoot or not shoot. I did pretty well. I almost got through it till I blew away an old lady. I think it was a young lady with a baby out there. You keep shooting though, you know, and then it pop up, and suddenly something pops up and bang. I remember when they had that really unfortunate incident of Ethiopian that was shot in New York, and there was a big blame there in that the guys were not senior enough, were not trained. Somebody said it, but after the one shot down, I don't blame the others for shooting. I mean, once it starts, then everybody turned it in, and that was the first guy, of course, he took the trigger. He panicked and pulled the trigger, and after that, all hell broke loose. Was inevitable. Not that it did, but not that it ever should have started.
So, looking back in all the places you've worked at, where was your favorite and why?
My favorite.
Your favorite area you worked in?
Oh, I loved a lot of work spawning salmon, steelhead, and when they're up the little creeks. There's a beauty to the woods in the winter. All the leaves are gone and down to the bare bones of the trees. And dirt is soft under your feet, and it's just the sound of the stream. And the guy's a good catcher. There's nothing accidental. You never get a wrong person or anything. There's no danger of that. I just walk on those creeks. I'd rather best patrol ever.
Because from some of the interviews we've looked at in class already, some wardens are more of the just conservationists, and other ones are more law enforcement. So did you kind of see yourself in the middle of that?
I would like to think that I know I'm a strong law enforcement. I know we're almost a law enforcement family. My daughter is director of the forensics animal DNA lab at Davis. But I'm a cop. I know that without any apologies. But I'd like to think that I had an orientation toward conservation, and I was originally drawn to some of it by my roommate at Berkeley, who was getting his doctorate in ecology, and we used to argue about things, and I had sort of a philosophical background that way. I admire conservation. My sister was an activist in that area too, and we agreed about that. There were some things like the death penalty we never talked about because we were both so sure that we were right and both hard-headed, and yet as much as we loved each other, we'd end up shouting at each other. So we just tacitly agreed that there were certain subjects we would stay away from. I don't know if that answers your question. I'm not sure I can answer your question.
So what was your what would you say was your favorite part of the job? Is it just going out and patrolling, doing undercover?
Oh, I like to patrol. I like being a game warden. I think that they thought I was nuts when I was in Sacramento, because I'd work in Sacramento all day, and then I'd go out and patrol at night, and go down and patrol the bear. We had a lot of trouble with Vietnamese coming in, or Southeast Asians. I shouldn't just say they're all Vietnamese, they weren't. And poaching, and used to go down and work down there at nights, and then go back and work in the office the rest of the time. Working Southeast Asians is interesting because they had a different background, and at that time I used to teach a knee surgeon position because the off the wall, the cons practice that they could get off the wall and get a weapon so fast you wouldn't believe it, but there were walls to put it against, but and proning out always seemed a little excessive, a little overkill. So you used to use a knee position, put a Southeast Asian in the knee position. He knows what's coming next. He's going to put a bullet in his brain, and you're going to shoot me now. I'm going to shoot you. I'm going to write you a ticket. I'm going to throw you in jail.
Oh my!
But you know that was. That was orientation. You have to learn that with different groups. I mean, different things. To a Mexican, if they don't lie to you, that shows they're stupid. That they can't think of a good lie. And you just have to figure that with a Mexican, they're going to lie to you. Well, it's a cultural thing. And with Vietnamese, you do not use a meal. Healing search position. Better to prone them out. They feel much happier there lying with their face in the mud than being in the kneel and they're waiting for a bullet in their brain.
So to a young person who is thinking about maybe trying to get into fish and game today, what kind of advice would you give to them?
Oh, I think that the biological training is probably the best. Too much law enforcement training with Mickey Mouse and the quality of the training. I know because I used to teach in junior college and I was awful. If I could get somebody who was really enthusiastic and we could get a dialogue going, it was great. It was fun. It was fun teaching then. But most of the time I was very good. And it pains me to say that, but I had a couple of daughters in college and I needed the extra money. But I would major in biological sciences and minor in law enforcement. Take as much as you could, do ride along, so you find out if you're going to like it. A lot of people don't like it. And we have a problem too, and this is very genderish, but sometimes it's hard for women to be as aggressive as you have to be in that situation. I'd get them in there in orals and I'd say, well, what do you do to keep in shape? And I'm hoping they'll say, well, I'm a black belt in karate, and well, I do knitting. That's not what I needed to hear. And some of the ones that did knitting turned out to be damn good officers, but it gets to be pretty much a bigger post, a big guess. But anyway, they can find out themselves whether they, before they make a commitment, find out that they hate having to arrest people. There is a kind of commitment that you have to make. Once you make it, boy, it's easy.
Because it's not really a job that you can... Is it? Well, when you were working, it wasn't really a job. You'd work hours, 8 hours a day and then go home. Is it still like that today? Do you know?
Extremely hard. They have so few positions. And they're always shoving diversity down your throat. So court said it was illegal to have quotas. So we didn't have quotas, we had goals. But the goals were mandatory. Now that's different from, but I'm not quite sure how it's different. Well, we had mandatory goals we had to reach, and we hired some bums too. And I knew at the time that I hired them. Yeah, and hired one guy because he was Hispanic, and I saw a record where he was arrested. I know he was a rapist. I mean, I'm sure from there that he finally got fired because caught him butchering a cow and stealing it, grand theft cow. Never hired him, but he was a counter. And another kid I hired that, oh man, I just knew that he was a nice kid, but he just was not going to do it. But when Gotti gave him part of the firing, interview ended up calling my lap. This guy don't give us the perception too of what it takes to be a game warden is interesting. I had a psychiatrist call me and wanted me to put on a patient of his because he can't get along with people and he thinks people are after him, and he could go out in the woods and pet animals. I guess that's what he thinks a game warden does. God, they want to give that guy a badge and a gun? I think the psychiatrist thought I'd just be an obdurate when I said I really didn't think that he was cut out to be a game warden. Amazing. Well, at least that one I never hired.
So when you moved around the state, was it usually, could you go to them and say, I want to move to a different jurisdiction, or was would tell you?
Well, I wanted to move out, and then the next move I made was a promotion to captain, which I wanted and needed. And sometimes I've wondered if I did the smartest thing in the world, but I love being a game warden, and our youngest child was just getting along fine, and the move home just didn't do her any good. And she had difficulties after that, and had difficulties until she was in college. Maybe she still does, I don't know. I've heard my wife, and my wife says, well, we had to, we needed the money, and but I wonder. I guess I think it's a little great second guess for myself.
So now that you're retired, are you still outdoorsy and get outside?
Yes. We live up in the foothills here. We used to usually had a pack of throwaway dogs, usually four or five, ones that we either adopted or more often they found us. And we're down to two now. We're trying to keep them down because we know we're going to have to move to Davis probably this in a few months. I hate leaving my mountains, but the stairs of the house are getting too much for my wife. And I've taken to taking little cat naps while driving down the freeway. So it's time. If I do that in Davis along with pushing a bicycle, I don't think I hurt anybody. But, then I took up writing again. And this time I figured, last time I figured, well, you've got an IQ that's right off the charts, and you love literature to read, you don't need to learn. Long, big, hard, long, slogging process, and that's why I hadn't published until probably recently. It took me 20 years to learn how to write, and I feel like now that I'm a pretty confident writer, the ego, the arrogance, easy, just pick it up and do it. I've gone to writing conferences and find novice writers there who think the same thing. What's hard about this? When they write something, they turn it in, look at it, and when you say as very nicely as possible, this is garbage, they are absolutely insulted. You don't greet their efforts with cheers and acclamations and dancing in the streets, but it just shows how obtuse you are. What an ego. What an ego.
Are you planning on writing any more books with Are you planning on writing any more books with kind of the game warden?
Well, to tell the truth, Emil, I really don't... Well, some of my books, well, one of my books, reviewer called Talent Raised to the Level of Genius. Now, that's a nice sound. And it's way too much, but I can't write at that level anymore. My once off the charts IQ, I'm sure the last time I tested with 20, I dropped 20 points. I don't know whether it's too much Duff's beer or what, but I think it's just being 84 years old, and I don't. I have to accept the fact that I'll never toss cabers again, or I'll never be able to bench press 400 pounds. It's the writing is part of that. I do some genre men's adventure novels, and I'm working on a couple of those now. But you know, that's almost like it just keeps you off the street and keeps you from stealing hubcaps. I'm not ashamed of them. They're as good as anything Ross McDonald ever did, but they're not what my Bigfoot trilogy or anything. They're not that good.
Do they also have game wardens in them?
And most of the hero or one of the people is either a game warden or has been a game warden. Of course, the Bigfoot trilogy, that's all game warden. And Bear Moon Rising, which is about a family of hippies just off the commune, and I written it from the point of view of a 14-year-old idiot savant. It's not the same attitude as a peculiar incident, which is incidentally is a brilliant job of working that way, using a 14-year-old idiot savant. That's a brilliant piece if you haven't read it. But his best friend is a game warden, so and the denouement ends up in the woods. It seems like I always end up back in the woods somehow or other.
Well, that wraps up my questions. Is there anything else you want to just make a statement about working for Fish and Game or your experience?
I think that being a game warden is the best job in the world. And by all means, if you're kind of find out what it is, though, before you commit yourself too much to it. But if you find out that you don't mind wet feet and cold nights and being cursed and threatened. When I was in Cornwall, I had my life threatened. I figured out about once every 6 weeks somebody was going to blow me away. And the first couple times that happened, you know, it sort of, and it didn't scare me, but it sort of shook me up, you know. I got a wife and family to take care of. And I got to let the guys down. I'm going to tell you, well, don't miss, asshole, because you will get a second shot, you know. To deal with it, but it was a great job. And, like I said, I'd love to do it all over again. Next time I catch that guy with the sucker stealing.